Another year, another heartbreaking way that the New York Yankees have ended their postseason run. As difficult as it will be, we're going to break down the Yankees series loss to the Tampa Bay Rays. Let's get right into it on this latest episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, which begins right now.
You are listening to the Pinstripe Talk podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, powered to you by Delahanty Media. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. It is tough being a New York Yankees fan today. As you already probably know, I'm recording this show just hours after the Yankees' heartbreaking loss to the Tampa Bay Rays in the American League Division Series. And another year full of huge expectations, and yet again, they come up short. And we're going to break down the entire series for you, go in depth in each individual game, look at the key moments of each contest, and kind of just give you a sense as to why the Yankees fell short in this series. And obviously, we're going to look at some of the key moments as to why the Yankees fell short. We're going to look at some of the umpire issues that did occur during this series, but nothing against Tampa. I just want to make that very clear. You know, they have a great roster, a great manager. They don't have the marquee names that you would look at, like a Yankees or a Red Sox or teams like that, but they have guys that bought in and get the job done. So you have to give them credit where credit's due, because they did play a very good series and are deserving of moving on. Unfortunately, them moving on means the Bronx Bombers go home, which is very disappointing to me. I'm sure you can tell within my voice I'm a little upset today, but, you know, I'll get over it, and we'll kind of break down everything for you today. Now, as always, we thank everybody for listening into our show. Our numbers this year have been incredible. You know, I would have loved to have had a couple more weeks of shows talking about the upcoming series, but unfortunately, this is how it ends. And, you know, we're going to get more into our plans for the show moving forward at the end of our broadcast. But a quick thank you to everybody for tuning in and supporting our brand, and I can't state it enough. But as always, find us on social media at Pinstripe Talk ND on Twitter, at Nick_Delahanty, also on Twitter. That's my personal account. And on Facebook by searching up Pinstripe Talk Podcast, our podcast powered by Delahanty Media. Find all of our shows and the Let's Debate podcast all on our website. Everything is there for you. And while you're at it, go to our store, support our brand. There's a lot of nice gear that we keep adding to the store. Go out and support. Now, as always, our show is available on all podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, if you listen on there, subscribe, rate, and review. Spotify, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, you name it, our show is there available for you. So we have a lot of different outlets for you to listen in. We thank you all in advance and from the past for supporting our show and listening in. We do appreciate all the feedback that we do get from the show. Now, let's jump right into Game 1. And going into Game 1, the Yankees had Gerrit Cole on the mound. So obviously, you're thinking that this is a must-win game for the Bronx Bombers. And you know, even though they were at a neutral site, the Yankees were the away team for Game 1. And they were able to get on the board nice and early in this contest. Early on, Aaron Hicks hit a sac fly, which gave Gerrit Cole a 1-0 lead before he even took the mound. But that lead did not last for long. Randy Arozarena, a guy you're going to hear about a lot in this series, he is quickly becoming one of the superstars in this game, hit a home run to dead center field off of Cole, knotting it up at one apiece. In the third inning, downtown goes Frazier. Frazier goes yard. Yankees go up 2-1. That lead did not last for long in the bottom half of the fourth inning. Yiman Choi, who continues to own Gerrit Cole, hit a two-run blast to give the Rays the lead, but the Yankees answered right back. In the top of the fifth, Kyle Higashioka homer to left field, followed by an Aaron Judge homer a few batters later. And again, this continues. The Yankees retake the lead. We didn't have any more action offensively until the ninth inning, when the Yankees exploded for 5 runs on 5 hits. Aaron Hicks started the party with a single to right center field, scoring Higashioka, and then a Giancarlo Stanton grand slam. You're going to hear a lot about him throughout the series as well. He made it 9-3, and that was your ball game. Let's look closely at some of the numbers, shall we? Gerrit Cole, 6 innings, allowed 3 runs, Two walks, struck out eight. He did allow two home runs, which was the majority of the damage done against him. Only threw 97 pitches. So essentially, yeah, it wasn't your lights out Gerrit Cole that we're so used to, but Cole got the job done. And from there, the Yankees turned to the bullpen, and the bullpen finished the job up. Green comes in the seventh. He works a scoreless inning. Britton follows him. Another scoreless inning. And then Luis Sessa comes in the ninth, because at that point the Yankees blew open the gates in this one. They did not have to go to Aroldis Chapman, and that was your game. Snell lasted five innings for the Rays, only allowed four runs. The bullpen did a solid job other than John Curtis in the ninth, who got roughed up a little bit. They kind of left him out to dry, but it is what it is. Yankees take game one, and you have to feel rather confident about winning game one, because first of all, your ace is on the mound. Anytime he's on the mound with that big contract they just dished out to him, you expect to win the ballgame. And also, let's face it, the Rays starting pitching is a little better than the Yankees right now. So you know that Cole gets you a win. You only have to win one of the next couple of games to force a game five and get Gerrit Cole back on the mound in this series. So a big win for the Bronx Bombers here. Couple of important stats. LeMahieu had two hits in this one. Aaron Hicks, who has been a consistent contributor, had three hits in this contest. Urshela had two hits as well. Higashioka in the ninth slot had two hits. We mentioned earlier his home run, Stanton's grand slam, and also we had the home run from Frazier and Judge. A couple of long balls there for the Bronx Bombers. Stanton's been unbelievable. You're going to hear a lot about him in this series. Like I said earlier, he actually tied a Yankees record for five straight games with a home run in the postseason. Only two other Yankees have done it in the history of the franchise, so that's a pretty impressive thing. We're going to get more in-depth on Stanton later on in the show. But Game 1 was a great way to start the series for the Yankees, and you had to be very confident going into Game 2. But here's where a lot of the sticky situation came about. Before Game 2, the Yankees announced that Davey Garcia would take the ball as the starting pitcher for the game. Now, let me just give you a little bit of insight as to my thought process on this. I was 150% okay with going with Masahiro Tanaka in Game 3. Because the way that I figured it was, you won Game 1, and you have a little wiggle room considering that the bullpen is relatively fresh. You know, you got an inning out of Britton, you got an inning out of Green. But for the most part, if Garcia struggled, you had guys you can go to in the bullpen. It wasn't like you were stuck in a situation where your bullpen was taxed and you needed seven out of your starter. So throwing in a guy like Garcia in that kind of situation made a lot of sense to me, because, you know, you go in with a short leash. And by short leash, I mean you go through maybe once throughout the order. You try to get three or four innings out of him and see how he does. And if he does well, you keep him in. If he doesn't, you take him out. But the Yankees had different plans. Garcia starts the inning, and he pitches a relatively okay inning. You know, he lets up a run and threw 27 pitches. But three pitches into his outing, Jay Happ's in the bullpen warming up. So now I'm saying to myself, okay, something's not right here, or this is part of their game plan. Garcia only lasted an inning before they took him out and turned the ball over to Happ. And the logic behind it was the front office and Aaron Boone were hoping that Kevin Cash was going to go to his left-handed heavy lineup. And then once they turned to Happ, Cash was going to have to panic and make some decisions that took some of those key guys out of the game to set up the bullpen for a better spot. Unfortunately, Cash didn't blink, which I kind of expected him not to, and Happ got roughed up. Two and two-thirds, actually. Four runs allowed, five hits, three walks. Through 70 pitches in less than three innings of work, it was frustrating to watch, especially given that if you look at the numbers this year, Garcia is just as solid against lefties as Happ is. So there wasn't much of a difference there. And to be quite honest with you, you started the 21-year-old in this situation. Why not see what the kid's got? Why not give him an opportunity? Didn't even give him a chance. Let him one hit, one run. And I know they explained it to him like that and that he knew it was going to be a short start, but I don't agree with it one bit. And I think that if you look at this series as a whole, you point to this game as the one that really got away from the Yankees. This was the one that they basically punted this one away. Hap made a throwing error. He looked atrocious, and yet he had the ball. And then after the game, nobody really wanted to take blame for the decision. Cashman said, oh, this was the plan, but it was up to Boone's discretion as to how long Garcia goes in the game. Then they asked about if Hap was in on this plan, and Hap said, you know, I told him I was uncomfortable with this plan. Bro, first and foremost, and I hate to be like this, but they're making a lot of money. And I'm going to use an example. If my boss tells me to do something, I have to do it. You know, that's my job. Hap should not be complaining, especially given that how poorly he's pitched in the postseason. You know, if you're looking at it from a grand scheme of things, last year, he spent the majority of the postseason as a reliever. This should be nothing new to him. As a veteran pitcher, and I get the whole, you know, you're a starter, it's a pride type of thing, and you have a routine and whatnot, but if I'm Hap and I was not fully in on this, why not just not go to him and let Garcia kind of air it out? See what the kid's got. I just don't agree with it at all. The Yankees end up struggling because of it. They allowed a couple more runs. The Rays ended up scoring 7 in this ball game, and 7-5 ended up being your final. One player in this game that I really want to talk about, and we're going to talk about him when we get to Game 5, is Tyler Glasnow. 5 innings of work. He did allow 4 runs, but he did strike out 10 Yankees. The Yankees had trouble with him all game, and the only guy who really seemed to hit him was Stanton. Stanton hit 2 homers off of him. Other than that, the damage was really not that bad against him. They really struggled to hit Tyler Glasnow in this ballgame. But let's take you through the scoring plays in this one. If you had a trivia question and you asked who hit the home run off of Davey Garcia in the first inning, and you did not say Randy Arozarena, I don't know what's gotten into your head, but Randy Arozarena has been crushing the ball, and the Yankees continue to pitch to him. He got the Rays up 1-0. The Yankees quickly tied it on a Giancarlo Stanton solo home run. The Rays retake the lead off of Jay Happ in the second, a Zunino 2-run blast, and then they added another home run in the third inning from Manuel Margot. The Yankees again get some more run support from Giancarlo Stanton. He hits his second homer of the game, a 3-run blast this time. At this point, it's 5-4 Rays. Kiermaier added an RBI single in the bottom of the fifth, and an Austin Meadows home run in the sixth made it 7-4. It was a lead the Yankees could not come back from. And, you know, they tried to threaten in the ninth. LeMahieu hit an RBI single, but it was not enough, and that was your ball game. The Yankees didn't do much offensively in this one. Obviously, Stanton had the 2 home runs, the 4 RBIs. Other than that, the Yankees only had 3 hits in the ball game. Pretty pathetic the way their performance was. You know, as bad as umpiring can be, if you strike out 18 times, I'm sorry, you're not going to win ball games. You had multiple guys with 3 strikeouts. Judge, Voit, Frazier, Sanchez, Glaber, and LeMahieu both had double-digit strikeouts. The only Yankee to not strike out in the ball game was Aaron Hicks, who continues to be an on-base presence with 2 walks and a hit of his own in this contest. But frustrating loss. The only good thing about it is you're going into a Game 3, you're evened up in the series, and you have Masahiro Tanaka on the mound, and you're expecting that playoff Tanaka is going to show up. But in this one, the umpires did hurt the Yankees. We're going to take you back to a situation. The Yankees had the bases loaded, and Luke Voit up with 2 outs. 3-0 pitch clearly was ball 4, gets called a strike by C.B. Buckner. 3-1 again, ball 4, called a strike again. Voit ends up getting out, and instead of having the Yankees' hottest hitter at the plate in Giancarlo Stanton up, it ended the inning with the Yankees only scoring 1 run. That came in the bottom half of the 3rd inning. And then Tampa, in the top half of the 4th, had a rather crushing dagger thanks to another bad call. Tanaka has a full count on the batter at the plate, and the runner at first takes off. Tanaka throws a strike right down the middle of the plate. Higashioka, in turn, who was catching in this ballgame, throws the runner out at second base for what we thought was a strike, come out, throw him out, double play. However, that was not the case. Home plate umpire C.B. Buckner called it a ball and then allowed 2 runners on base. The next batter, Kevin Kiermaier, hits a home run that scored both runs and made it 4-1. So it was like a crushing dagger at that point. That, you know, it just felt like the Yankees were doomed at that point of the game. Let's take you through the scoring, please. We're going to go back a little bit. I hate to retract, but we are going to do it. A Perez single gave the Rays a 1-0 lead in the top half of the second inning. A Judge Shaq fly tied it in the bottom half of the third. That's when the whole Voit controversy happened with the bases loaded. Then the top of the fourth, like I mentioned, Kevin Kiermaier hit the home run to put him up 4-1. That guy again, Randy Arozarena, hit another home run in the top half of the fifth. 5-1 Tampa at that point. Aaron Hicks added a double in the bottom half to make it 5-2. But then in the top half of the sixth, Perez homered and a Choi double against Sessa made it 8-2. Stanton tried to cut the lead in the eighth with a homer of his own, but it was not enough. 8-4 was your final. Giancarlo homers again in this one. He had two hits in this ballgame. The Yankees limited their strikeouts to only 9 in this ballgame, but it was still not enough. They only were able to tally 7 hits on the ballgame and give credit to the Rays pitching. Morton was solid through 5 innings. Curtis, after that really bad performance in Game 1, he bounced back. He had the rookie, the left-hander, who struggled a little bit, but then Castillo came in to close the door. And you have to give credit where credit's due, though. You know, Chad Green didn't have it in this one. He came in relief for Tanaka in the fifth inning. Tanaka got kind of screwed by a couple of calls, but he just wasn't vintage Tanaka either. You know, he was solid. I wouldn't say he was fantastic. I would say he was solid. And, you know, the Lions score doesn't really show that because the home run after that whole controversy with the strike him out, throw him out, really did impact him. And you know, it really seemed like a crushing blow for him in this one. Green didn't have it, like I mentioned. Sessa allowed a run, but otherwise was solid. And then you got to give credit to Nelson and King. They combined for 3 innings and really helped save the Yankees' bullpen. So, you know, another tough loss here. And now the Yankees' backs are against the wall going into a pivotal game 4 with Jordan Montgomery on the mound. And I have to be completely honest with you. I wasn't sure about what to expect from Montgomery. He was making his first start since September 24th when he pitched against Toronto in Buffalo. And he's been so up and down that it's kind of hard to really determine what Montgomery you're going to get. And he's a guy that, if you go back to past shows, I've been really high on. I think that he's got a lot of upside. I think that he could be a really good number 4 or 5 starter in the big leagues. But he just hasn't shown that consistency. And at some points, you can just look at what he does. And he can fly out, dominate on a mound. But there's other times where he just looks completely lost and struggles. And one of his bad starts came against Tampa on September 2nd. He didn't even get out of the first inning and allowed 4 runs. That was the thing that kept going in my mind, was what happens if this Rays team jumps on him early, the season's over. Like, I was really upset about this. I was nervous going in. But I got to give him credit. Montgomery did the job. He really did. He deserves a lot of praise from Yankee fans because he stepped up when the spotlight was biggest on him. And let's look at his numbers closely. So Montgomery was able to give them 4 innings of work. He only allowed 1 run. He did walk 3, struck out 4, but he wasn't fantastic. His stuff wasn't amazing, but he never broke. He bent, but he didn't break. Allowing 1 run and being able to turn the ball over to the Yankees' key part of the bullpen was tremendously, tremendously huge. Let's face it. Unless the Yankees decided to go to Davey Garcia in Game 4, they really didn't have a choice here. They really didn't have a guy that they could have said, okay, you know, this is the guy we're going to go with, and here's how we're going to roll. It was Montgomery or Garcia. And after Game 2's debacle, I don't think Boone was going to go with Garcia to start. So Montgomery comes in. He does a fantastic job. But the other thing to mention is how good the Yankees' 3-headed monster in the back of the bullpen was in this one. Green, Britton, and Chapman combined for 5 innings of work. They did not allow a run. They did not allow a hit. They struck out 7 batters in the process. Only walked 1. And that came in the 9th inning. Chapman walked the batter. So the Yankees pitching did the job in this one to get the Yankees a much-needed 5-1 win and to force a Game 5 in this series. The Rays went with an opener with Thompson, turned the ball over to Yarbrough, who was pretty solid in 5 innings of work, but the Yankees offense did just enough in this ballgame to edge a victory. Let's go through some of the scoring, please. Early on, Luke Voit hit a home run to give the Yankees a 1-0 lead. That was followed by a DJ LeMahieu sack fly to make it 2-0. The only run against Montgomery came on a Brandon Lau fielder's choice. It was 2-1 at that point. That was the only run the Rays would score. Yankees added 2 runs on a Gleyber Good home run to left field, an absolute moonshot down the left field line, made it 4-1, and a Higashioka single in the bottom half of the 8th inning gave the Yankees a 5-1 lead that they would not relish. And if you're looking at this as a whole, number one, you have to be really amped up that the game worked out the way the Yankees had hoped it was. Montgomery turned the ball over to the key guys in that bullpen. There was no need for a Jonathan Holder or a Garcia or a Sessa or a Nick Nelson to come in and eat up innings. Montgomery to the big guns, and the big guns carried the load. That was huge. One concern, though, is how much the big guns and Chapman and Green and Britton were used in that game, especially going into a pivotal Game 5. You know, you have Gerrit Cole on the mound, but on 3 days rest, you're not thinking that Cole's going to give you 8 innings of work, so you know you're going to need your bullpen. And let's face it, the Rays' bullpen has been really good. Their main guys were rested in this one, so they were coming in fresh. So, Yankees win this one. We go to Game 5. And the probable starters for this one are Gerrit Cole, like I mentioned, and Tyler Glasnow, who is coming off 2 days of rest. But you have to also remember, Glasnow or Snell were the two options. Snell would have been on 3 days rest. But if you're the Rays, you're looking at the numbers, and you're saying to yourself, you know, Glasnow pitched better against the Yankees than Snell did. The Yankees have a harder time hitting Glasnow than they do Snell. So Glasnow on 2 days rest said, you know what, I'm ready, give me the ball. And, you know, I hate to give credit, but, you know, you have to. When you have a guy like that who's willing to take the ball on 2 days rest and goes out and gives you everything he has, you have to really appreciate the effort and really tip your cap to him. The guy, you know, flat out came out and said, you know what, I want to be out there. That's a competitor. I love that kind of fire in him. He only lasted into the third inning, but he did the job. No hits allowed, no runs, walked 2, struck out 2, only threw 37 pitches, but you had to expect that he was going to be used as some type of an opener, that he wasn't going to go 5 or 6 innings in this ballgame. Yeah, the Rays would have loved that, but they weren't going to push the issue with one of their top starting pitchers. And from there, the Rays' pitching was phenomenal. Nick Anderson let up a home run to Judge, but he lasted 2 2/3. That was the only damage against him. Then Fairbanks came in for 2 innings. They scored nothing on him. And Diego Castillo, who was mightily impressive over 2 innings of work, only allowing the Yankees, overall, 1 run in this contest on just 3 hits. And the Yankees' pitching was arguably just as good. Gerrit Cole pitched into the 6th inning, allowed 1 hit, and that was on a home run to Austin Meadows. And, you know, he walked 2. Both came in the 1st inning. One was actually a hit by pitch. He hit a Rosarena and struck out 9 through 94 pitches, and that's the kind of outing you expect from the ace in Gerrit Cole. You know, he's making this big money we talk about, and we were expecting him to come out like CC Sabathia did when he was with the Brewers for that magical postseason running. You know, Cole was as good as advertised. The problem that I had with this one was I would have tried to have Cole finish the 6th inning because I think that it really put the Yankees at a disadvantage, especially given how much the bullpen was used in that Game 4. Britton comes in, finishes the inning. He lasts into the 7th inning, and then Boone brings in Aroldis Chapman to get 7 outs in this ballgame, because you figure when he came in, you still had the 8th and the 9th and then the final out of the 7th inning. So that's where it got a little sticky for me. And that was actually the deciding factor in this game. You know, they always say that poetic justice happens. And, you know, sometimes you're on the right side of it, sometimes you're on the wrong side of it. You do wrong, usually it comes back to bite you. And if you remember, during the season, Chapman threw over the head of Mike Brousseau, and it caused a big controversy. Chapman actually has a suspension that is being appealed till next year. It's like a 3-game suspension for it. But at that point, you're just saying to yourself, you know, did he do it on purpose? And if he did it on purpose, why? What was the logic behind it? Well, Brousseau got the last laugh last night. 10-pitch at-bat, ended with a home run that was your deciding factor in this one. It was heartbreaking. It was devastating. For the 2nd year in a row, the Yankees saw their closer get out-dueled by a hitter in home run fashion to lose a series. And it's very, 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 very frustrating. But Brousseau got his revenge on Chapman. And the Rays are moving on to the American League Championship Series, where they will take on the Houston Astros. So let's just talk about some things in this series that really stood out to me. Number one, I already mentioned that the umpiring was terrible. I want robo umpires. I hate to sound like that kind of person that is blaming the umpires for things. I know that the Yankees could have played better, obviously. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, in pivotal games like that, your strike zone has to be consistent. You cannot have a situation where your umpires are dictating the game. That void at bat, where he should have walked, changed the impact of that game. Following that inning, the Tanaka strike him out, throw him out double play, that ended up being a walk, hurt the Yankees. That killed them in that ball game. That changed the entire complexion of the game. So the umpires need to be held accountable. And obviously, I'm sure there's plays on the Rays side and pitches on the Rays side that didn't go in their favor as well. So I'm not saying it's just one-sided. But these umpires need to be held accountable and they need to be better. C.B. Buckner getting 13% of his pitches that he called wrong. That's atrocious to me. That is simply atrocious. I can't even imagine that. They have to be better. They really do. Also, while we're on the non-Yankee side of things, TBS is absolutely atrocious. I never want to watch a playoff game on TBS again. Number one, they never show you the highlights of the important things. They just show you the same exact replay of things that don't even matter. And their base cam. I don't care about the base cam. Show me the important plays. Show me the replay of the Voit strike that they called that they should have called the ball. Also, if you're on a national stage and you're broadcasting a game, don't you think it shouldn't be biased? Don't you think that they should be partial to both teams? Ron Darling is sickening to listen to. I know he's a Mets commentator, so he has to root for the Rays because that's his nature. But I just can't simply imagine that he's so biased toward the Rays. It was sickening to listen to. I can't even imagine it. That's like me going on a Mets broadcast and talking about the Yankees or ripping the Mets in general. And the sad thing is, what Darling has to say some of the time actually could be good content for the broadcast. But the entire time, he was too busy loving the Rays. And the broadcast, it just seemed like every time the Rays did something good, they were thrilled. But the Yankees did something good, it was the end of the world. So if that's the case, Major League Baseball, I'm going to challenge you because I'm sick of it. If that's the case, let your homegrown broadcasters call the games and give the fans the option of what broadcast they want to listen to. Let the Yankee fans listen to the YES Network and listen to Kay and Cone and O'Neill and get a broadcast that's catered to what they want to hear. And the same thing for Rays fans. If the Rays want to listen to their broadcasters, it is what it is. After the radio broadcaster made the comment about hopefully getting Judge and Stanton hurt, you know, that kind of made me sick to my stomach. Who would wish injury on anybody? That's pretty pathetic, if you ask me. But, you don't want to sit and watch a broadcast or a baseball game where you have to mute the TV because the broadcasters are utterly atrocious and one-sided. That's just simply sad, and I don't think that's right for the sport. And they're wondering why people don't watch games, because who wants to listen to their team get badgered by the broadcasters that are supposed to be not showing any bias here? It's rather sickening, and Ron Darling should not be on a national broadcast. He's atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. Go back to Met broadcast. He's used to losing with the Mets. Sickening. But anyway, let's get back into the series because I'm tired of talking about Ron Darling. A couple of notes. Number one, Stanton. Stanton gets ripped a lot. First and foremost, he gets ripped a lot by me. Why? Because I know how good Giancarlo Stanton could be, and it frustrates me that such a human specimen could get hurt so many times and re-aggravate things and not playing in the field. It just makes me sick. But this postseason, Giancarlo Stanton showed all Yankee fans why Brian Cashman made the trade for him. Because when he's on and he's locked in, he's one of the best hitters in baseball. And that's not being biased or anything. That's just flat-out truth. He absolutely crushed the ball throughout the entire postseason. So you got to give him credit. He stepped up in the big moment. But now here's the challenge for Giancarlo. Do it over 162 next year. Be that guy that won the National League MVP. You're going to be DHing, obviously. We know that. You're the long-term DH. That's cool. But long-term, be that guy that could be the reliable presence in that lineup that the Yankees so desperately need. That's why they brought him in. And I'm happy for him. I'm really happy to see him get on track, and hopefully this is a sign of good things to come. But for the long run, I want to see if he can stay healthy and keep rolling the way he did. The Yankees had some struggles in this series. Number one, Aaron Judge was pathetic, 143 batting average. He did hit the home run in Game 5, but really did not do anything else. Was really lost at the plate. You know, say what you want about Judge. He's been rather disappointing, especially with the injuries as well. He's a guy that I'm not necessarily worried about, but again, in the biggest stage, Judge did not show up. And Aaron Hicks was really impressive, 389 batting average, 455 OBP. He had a really nice playoffs as well. You got to give him a lot of credit. The Yankees really did not get much out of some key guys in their lineup. Judge struggled. Voit was terrible. Urshela didn't hit. You know, you look at it, and it's frustrating, but, you know, the playoffs are a different animal. You face a lot of good pitching, and those guys just did not have it in the series. You know, it is what it is. It's frustrating to think about, but, you know, what are you going to do about it now? You got to give credit to Gardner. He had a really good second half of the year, if you want to call it that, and into the playoffs, hitting .364, robbed the Rosarena of a home run in Game 5. That could have been a dagger there, the way the Yankees' offense was. So give him credit. Torres hit .313. Not much power, but he did hit the home run in Game 4, like we mentioned. And Kyle Higashioka, .308 batting average. I would have kept this guy in all five games. I would have never played Sanchez in any of the games. I would have just kept him in. You know, he's really earned his keep there. Now, speaking of Sanchez, what's the future of Gary Sanchez? To be quite honest with you, I don't know. Do the Yankees give up on him, especially given the numbers that he has put up in the past? Or do they look and take a seat back and say, you know what, how can we get Gary back on track and kind of give him another shot at it? It's kind of assuring to know that Higashioka can step up when needed, especially defensively. He put on a clinic on the defensive side of the ball. You got to give him credit for everything he's done and how he's worked with the pitching staff. But if you're Gary Sanchez, you have to think that your future with the Yankees is in question. The Yankees may look to move on from him during this offseason. And then the pitching. Obviously, the bullpen did its job for the most part. They did have their fair share of struggles. But what we did notice throughout this postseason run was that the Yankees' bullpen was too thin. And a lot of the issue with that is Ottavino's struggles and losing Tommy Canley to Tommy John surgery. Those are two things that I feel were real daggers, because at the beginning of the year, if you're looking at it, you're saying, all right, you're going to go Ottavino or Canley in the sixth. You're going to go Green in the seventh, Britton in the eighth, Chapman in the ninth. They spent part of the year without Britton. They spent part of the year without Chapman. They spent most of the year without Canley. Green had his fair share of struggles. Ottavino was flat out terrible all year. And what was considered one of the best bullpens in baseball quickly became a deficit on this team. So, you know, the Yankees got to add some bullpen depth this offseason. I think there's going to be a lot of changes this offseason. But, you know, I'm not the GM, so we'll see what Cashman and company do. And the starting pitching. I hate to scare you all, but I'm going to. Right now, the Yankees have one starting pitcher lined up in their rotation. And yeah, I get they have Garcia and Montgomery and Schmidt and King that they have in the mix. I totally get that. But look at the rotation they were going to start the year with. Cole, obviously, is penciled in for the next, what, 8 years? Tanaka's a free agent. Who knows if he comes back? Paxton, free agent. Please don't re-sign him. Let him go. Severino, Tommy John surgery. We're not going to have him till probably June or July, if that. And then Jay Happ, who is a free agent as well, and let him walk out the door too. But we're going to get more into that in our off-season kind of preview show. So right now, the Yankees really have one guarantee in their starting rotation. You figure that guys like Garcia and Schmidt are going to get their opportunity in Montgomery, but how do you fill the rest of the voids? What happens if those guys don't step up? And you had a perfect opportunity to see what Garcia could do in the postseason, and you let it slide past you So that's a frustrating thing in itself as well. And another thing on this whole situation, Aaron Boone. I'm going to state it, and I'm going to state it nice and clearly for all of you. Aaron Boone is not the answer to bring the Yankees to their next World Series championship. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I feel like he is a puppet for Brian Cashman. I feel like the front office is getting in the way, and I love what A-Rod had to say about it. You know, he was saying how the manager should get out of the way and let the players play. Well, you have the front office influencing it, and now it becomes more hands in the mix, and it's not a good recipe for success. And, you know, you don't have managers anymore that are going to fully make decisions. You don't have the Buck Showalters and the Joe Torres of the world that are going to not be influenced by the front office. Now you have guys that are being hired because they can be controlled and dictated by what their front office personnel want them to do. Do I think Aaron Boone gets re-signed? Absolutely. I think that Cashman likes him. I think that Cashman likes what he's doing. But do I think it's the right answer? Absolutely not. Boone made a lot of questionable decisions in this series alone and in the postseason alone as well. Like, you can make the same case throughout the regular season, questionable decisions. Postseason, he got outmanaged by Cash. The move that made me laugh the most was he pinch hit Clint Frazier and Cash went to make a pitching move of his own. Instead of letting Frazier hit, he brings in Mike Ford, who hasn't had a hit since August. And then you look at Game 5. Castillo on the mound, Higashioka do up at the plate. He pinch hits Ford, again, who doesn't have a hit since August. And instead of just letting Higashioka hit, Ford strikes out looking at a pitch that was right down the middle of the plate. And now, considering the fact of, if you're not going to let Higashioka hit, you're not going to pinch hit Sanchez in that situation. He's that much in the doghouse, you're not going to let him just hit, because he's obviously going to take over in the field. So to me, that didn't make any sense. But I hate to harbor on all this, especially in this show, but we're going to do some special broadcasts and kind of break down our off-season to-do list and look ahead to the off-season for you in further detail as we go along. But before we wrap up today's show, and I kind of touched on it earlier in the show, first and foremost, thank you all so much for listening to my podcast on a regular basis. We did a great job this year in terms of being able to bring you content. We kind of got robbed with a 60-game season. We would have had a lot more broadcasts for you throughout the months. But we were able to do a show after every series. We were able to bring you some special broadcasts in the mix regarding certain things happening. And, you know, there was so much that we were able to talk about with you. And you guys continued to listen in and continue to support the show. And for somebody who loves the New York Yankees like I do, it means the world to me to have this platform to talk to you guys about how I'm feeling about things and how you're feeling about certain situations. And, you know, there's never a right answer in terms of baseball. You know, it's a crazy sport, and my opinion may differ from yours and vice versa. But the thing remains the same, that we all have a passion for the New York Yankees. And obviously, the Yankees have a roller coaster of emotions. One day we're thrilled, one day we absolutely can't stand baseball, but the one thing stays the same. We have this platform to talk about it and voice our opinions about it and be vocal about it and really just show our pinstripe pride. Now, this loss hurts, and I'm really considering taking a little hiatus, and not long, because obviously you guys know I'm involved in a lot of different things. We have the Let's Debate podcast, which we go live every Thursday night. So if we do have a little bit of a break from this show, you can hear me on there. And obviously follow me on Bronx Pinstripes, where I write. I firmly believe the best site out there for Yankees baseball. I've been a part of the team for over 5 years now. I love every single minute of it. They have a lot of great content as well. If I was you, I would check them out. And then again, Keeping It Heel, where I write about the Tar Heels. And you know, you might not like college football, you might not like college basketball, but as passionate as I am about the Yankees, I'm just as passionate about Carolina basketball. I absolutely love it, and, you know, I'm counting down the days till the season because I have a void that the Yankees have left in my heart for the time being. But, as always, I'm dedicated to bringing you guys shows and content that are going to be used and, you know, helpful as the offseason goes along. I'm already counting down the days to opening day. I can't wait for that day to come, and I can't wait for the day that we can talk about some Yankees moves and surprise things that happened during the offseason run. So again, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you all for listening to our show. If you forgot or, you know, you want to follow us on social media, find us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND, my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Search us up on Facebook by looking up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. Our podcast available on all podcasting platforms. Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review the show on there. Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music. Our shows are all there available for you. And, of course, social media is the best way for you to keep up to date as to when we are going to have new content. I will keep you guys updated on that and keep you in the loop on things as well. It's going to be a long offseason, people. The Yankees have a lot of work to do. We're going to talk about it on our next couple of shows and kind of break down how you guys are feeling moving into the offseason. So make sure you follow us on social media and keep an eye out for some polls, some Twitter questions, things like that, because your voice could be heard on our show. And I mentioned it earlier, we're powered by Delahanty Media. The brand is growing by the day. Go to our website, DelahantyMedia.com, to check out everything that we have to offer. We have a lot to offer you there, so I would suggest you check it out. Now, I have a way that I want to end today's show, but I'm going to get into that in a moment. But before I do that, I just want to say a final thought here. You know, it's been a rough go. 2009 seems like an eternity ago, especially given that growing up, it seems like every year the Yankees were in the postseason and deep into the postseason, going to the World Series. But one thing has to remain the same. As frustrated and heartbroken as we are, and as we are going to be until we see the Yankees on the field on opening day in 2021, there are a couple of things we have to hope for. Number one, we have to hope that our world gets somewhat back into order. You know, with the COVID-19 virus impacting the world, it didn't look like we were even going to have a season this year. So let's consider that a blessing. We were able to watch Yankees baseball, even though it was only 60 games and then your postseason run of 7 games. You know, we still got 67 Yankee games compared to 0. So that's something that we should really be happy about that we were able to experience. And hopefully in 2021, we're back in the Bronx and we can actually go to games and see each other again. I can't wait to get to the stadium and see people and hang out with my dad and go to games. I just can't wait for that day to come. You know, it's been way, way too long since I've been in the Bronx, and you guys have been in the Bronx as well. But again, as frustrated as we are and as heartbroken as we are, remember, keep your pinstripes on and never lose that love to the New York Yankees. You all know the line. It's been all over social media. Say it with me. Yankee fan today, tomorrow, forever. It's as simple as that. Let's go Yankees. As we wrap up today's show, we want to make a mention of the passing of the great Whitey Ford, the chairman of the board, who passed away right before Game 5 at the age of 91. He was instrumental in the Yankees organization for many years, helping them to numerous World Series titles, a Hall of Famer on and off the field, a legend that will never be replaced. So as we wrap up today's show, we remember the great Whitey Ford.